Chapter 42. And he said, Yes, by all means. Apostrophe and then she begged his assistance in it. She told him she would furnish us with everything that was convenient, whatever it cost her. He accordingly gave her a long particular of things necessary for a planter, which, by his account, came to about 80 pounds. And, in short, she went about as dexterously to buy them, as if she had been an old Virginia merchant, only that she bought, by my direction, above twice as much of everything as he had given her a list of. These she put on board in her own name, took his bills of lading for them, and endorsed those bills of lading to my husband, insuring the cargo afterwards in her own name, by our order, so that we were provided for all events, and for all disasters. I should have told you, that my husband gave her all his whole stock of number 108 which, as I have said, he had about him in gold, to lay out thus, and I gave her a good sum besides, so that I did not break into the stock which I had left in her hands at all, but after we had sorted out our whole cargo, we had yet near number 200 in money, which was more than enough for our purpose. In this condition, very cheerful, and indeed joyful at being so happily accommodated as we were, we set sail from Bugby's Hole to Gravesend, where the ship lay about 10 more days, and where the captain came on board for good and all. Here the captain offered us a civility, which indeed we had no reason to expect, namely, to let us go on shore and refresh ourselves, upon giving our words in a solemn manner, that we would not go from him, and that we would return peaceably on board again. This was such an evidence of his confidence in us, that it overcame my husband, who, in a mere principle of gratitude, told him, as he could not be in any capacity, to make a suitable return for such a favor, so he could not think of accepting of it, nor could he be easy, that the captain should run such a risk. After some mutual civilities, I gave my husband a purse, in which was 80 guineas, and he put it into the captain's hand. There, Captain, apostrophe says he, there's part of a pledge for our fidelity. If we deal dishonestly with you on any account, 'tis your own. Apostrophe and on this, we went on shore. Indeed, the captain had assurance enough of our resolutions to go, for that having made such provision to settle there, it did not seem rational that we would choose to remain here at the expense and peril of life, for such it must have been if we had been taken again. In a word, we went all on shore with the captain, and supped together in Gravesend, where we were very merry, stayed all night, lay at the house where we supped, and came all very honestly on board again with him in the morning. Here we bought 10 dozen bottles of good beer, some wine, some fowls, and such things as we thought might be acceptable on board. My governess was with us all this while, and went with us round into the Downs, as did also the captain's wife, with whom she went back. I was never so sorrowful at parting with my own mother as I was at parting with her, and I never saw her more. We had a fair easterly wind sprung up the third day, after we came to the Downs, and we sailed from thence the 10th of April. Nor did we touch any more at any place, till, being driven on the coast of Ireland by a very hard gale of wind, the ship came to an anchor in a little bay, near the mouth of a river, whose name I remember not, but they said the river came down from Limerick, and that it was the largest river in Ireland. Here, being detained by bad weather for some time, the captain, who continued the same kind, good-humored man as at first, took us two on shore with him again. He did it now in kindness to my husband indeed, who bore the sea very ill, and was very sick, especially when it blew so hard. Here we bought in again a store of fresh provisions, especially beef, pork, mutton, and fowls, and the captain stayed to pickle up 5 or 6 barrels of beef, to lengthen out the ship's store. We were here not above 5 days, when the weather turning mild, and a fair wind, we set sail again, and in 42 days came safe to the coast of Virginia. When we drew near to the shore, the captain called me to him, and told me that he found by my discourse I had some relations in the place, and that I had been there before, and so he supposed I understood the custom in their disposing the convict prisoners when they arrived. I told him I did not, and that as to what relations I had in the place, he might be sure I would make myself known to none of them, while I was in the circumstances of a prisoner, and that as to the rest, we left ourselves entirely to him to assist us, as he was pleased to promise us he would do. He told me I must get somebody in the place, to come and buy us as servants, and who must answer for us to the governor of the country, if he demanded us. I told him we should do as he should direct, so he brought a planter to treat with him, as it were, for the purchase of these two servants, my husband and me, and there we were formally sold to him, and went ashore with him. The captain went with us, and carried us to a certain house, whether it was to be called a tavern or not I know not, but we had a bowl of punch there made of rum, etc., and were very merry. After some time the planter gave us a certificate of discharge, and an acknowledgement of having served him faithfully, and we were free from him the next morning, to go whither we would. For this piece of service the captain demanded of us 6,000 weight of tobacco, which he said he was accountable for to his freighter, and which we immediately bought for him, and made him a present of 20 guineas besides, with which he was abundantly satisfied. It is not proper to enter here into the particulars of what part of the colony of Virginia we settled in, for divers reasons. It may suffice to mention that we went into the great river Piamac, the ship being bound thither, and there we intended to have settled first, though afterwards we altered our minds. The first thing I did of moment after having gotten all our goods on shore, and placed them in a storehouse, or warehouse, which, with a lodging, we hired at the small place or village, where we landed I say, the first thing was to inquire after my mother, and after my brother, that fatal person whom I married as a husband, as I have related at large. A little inquiry furnished me with information that Mrs., that is, my mother, was dead, that my brother or husband, was alive, which I confess I was not very glad to hear. But which was worse, I found he was removed from the plantation where he lived formerly, and where I lived with him, and lived with one of his sons, in a plantation just by the place where we landed, and where we had hired a warehouse. I was a little surprised at first, but as I ventured to satisfy myself that he could not know me, I was not only perfectly easy, but had a great mind to see him, if it was possible to so do without his seeing me. In order to, that I found out by inquiry the plantation where he lived, and with a woman of that place whom I got to help me, like what we call a chairwoman, I rambled about towards the place, as if I had only a mind, to see the country and look about me. At last I came so near, that I saw the dwelling house. I asked the woman whose plantation that was. She said it belonged to such a man, and looking out a little to our right hands, there, apostrophe says she, is the gentleman that owns the plantation, and his father with him. Apostrophe what are their Christian names? Apostrophe said one. I know not, apostrophe says she, what the old gentleman's name is, but the son's name is Humphrey, and I believe, apostrophe says she, the father's is so too. Apostrophe you may guess, if you can, what a confused mixture of joy and fright possessed my thoughts upon this occasion, for I immediately knew that this was nobody else but my own son, by that father she showed me, who was my own brother. I had no mask, but I ruffled my hood so about my face, that I depended upon it that after above 20 years' absence, and withal not expecting anything of me in that part of the world, he would not be able to know anything of me. But I need not have used all that caution, for the old gentleman was grown dim-sighted by some distemper which had fallen upon his eyes, and could but just see well enough to walk about, and not run against a tree or into a ditch. The woman that was with me had told me that by a mere accident, knowing nothing of what importance it was to me. As they drew near to us, I said, Does he know you, Mrs. Owen? Apostrophe apostrophe so they called the woman. Yes, apostrophe said she, if he hears me speak, he will know me, but he can't see well enough to know me or anybody else. And so she told me the story of his sight, as I have related. This made me secure, and so I threw open my hoods again, and let them pass by me. It was a wretched thing for a mother thus, to see her own son, a handsome, comely young gentleman in flourishing circumstances, and durst not make herself known to him, and durst not take any notice of him. Let any mother of children, that reads this, consider it, and but think with what anguish of mind I restrained myself, what yearnings of soul I had in me to embrace him, and weep over him, and how I thought all my entrails turned within me, that my very bowels moved, and I knew not what to do, as I now know, not how to express those agonies. When he went from me, I stood gazing and trembling, and looking after him, as long as I could see him, then sitting down to rest me, but turned from her, and lying on my face, wept, and kissed the ground that he had set his foot on. I could not conceal my disorder so much from the woman, but that she perceived it, and thought I was not well, which I was obliged to pretend was true, upon which she pressed me to rise, the ground being damp and dangerous, which I did accordingly, and walked away. As I was going back again, and still talking of this gentleman and his son, a new occasion of melancholy offered itself thus. The woman began, as if she would tell me a story to divert me. There goes, apostrophe says she, a very odd tale among the neighbors, where this gentleman formerly lived. Apostrophe what was that? Apostrophe said I why, apostrophe says she, that old gentleman going to England, when he was a young man, fell in love with a young lady there, one of the finest women that ever was seen, and married her, and brought her over hither to his mother who was then living. He lived here several years with her, apostrophe continued she, and had several children by her, of which the young gentleman that was with him now was one. But after some time, the old gentlewoman, his mother, talking to her of something relating to herself, when she was in England, and of her circumstances in England, which were bad enough, the daughter-in-law began to be very much surprised and uneasy, and, in short, examining further into things, it appeared past all contradiction, that the old gentlewoman was her own mother, and that consequently that son was his wife's own brother, which struck the whole family with horror, and put them into such confusion, that it had almost ruined them all. The young woman would not live with him. The son, her brother and husband, for a time went distracted. And at last the young woman went away for England, and has never been heard of since. Apostrophe, it is easy to believe that I was strangely affected with this story, but 'tis impossible to describe the nature of my disturbance. I seemed astonished at the story, and asked her a thousand questions about the particulars, which I found she was thoroughly acquainted with. At last I began to inquire into the circumstances of the family, how the old gentlewoman, I mean my mother, died, and how she left what she had. For my mother had promised me very solemnly, that when she died she would do something for me, and leave it so, as that, if I was living, I should one way or other come at it, without its being in the power of her son, my brother and husband, to prevent it. She told me she did not know exactly how it was ordered, but she had been told that my mother had left a sum of money, and had tied her plantation for the payment of it, to be made good to the daughter, if ever she could be heard of, either in England or elsewhere, and that the trust was left with his son, who was the person that we saw with his father. This was news too good for me to make light of, and, you may be sure, filled my heart with a thousand thoughts. What course I should take, how, and when, and in what manner I should make myself known, or whether I should ever make myself known or no. Here was a perplexity that I had not indeed skill to manage myself in, neither knew I what course to take. It lay heavy upon my mind night and day. I could neither sleep nor converse, so that my husband perceived it, and wondered what ailed me, strove to divert me, but it was all to no purpose. He pressed me to tell him what it was troubled me, but I put it off, till at last, importuning me continually, I was forced to form a story, which yet had a plain truth, to lay it upon to. I told him I was troubled, because I found we must shift our quarters, and alter our scheme of settling, for that I found I should be known, if I stayed in that part of the country, for that my mother being dead, several of my relations were come into that part where we then was, and that I must either discover myself to them, which in our present circumstances was not proper on many accounts, or remove, and which to do I knew not, and that this, it was that made me so melancholy and so thoughtful. He joined with me in this, that it was by no means proper for me to make myself known to anybody in the circumstances in which we then were, and therefore he told me he would be willing to remove to any other part of the country, or even to any other country, if I thought fit. But now I had another difficulty, which was, that if I removed to any other colony, I put myself out of the way of ever making a due search after those effects which my mother had left. Again I could never, so much as think of breaking the secret of my former marriage to my new husband. It was not a story, as I thought, that would bear telling, nor could I tell what might be the consequences of it. And it was impossible to search into the bottom of the thing without making it public all over the country, as well who I was, as what I now was also. In this perplexity I continued a great while, and this made my spouse very uneasy, for he found me perplexed, and yet thought I was not open with him, and did not let him into every part of my grievance. And he would often say, he wondered what he had done, that I would not trust him with whatever it was, especially if it was grievous and afflicting. The truth is, he ought to have been trusted with everything, for no man in the world could deserve better of a wife. But this was a thing I knew, not how to open to him, and yet having nobody to disclose any part of it to, the burthen was too heavy for my mind. For let them say what they please of our sex not being able to keep a secret, my life is a plain conviction to me of the contrary. But be it our sex, or the man's sex, a secret of moment should always have a confidant, a bosom friend, to whom we may communicate the joy of it, or the grief of it, be it which it will, or it will be a double weight upon the spirits, and perhaps become even insupportable in itself. And this I appeal to all human testimony for the truth of. And this is the cause, why many times men as well as women, and men of the greatest and best qualities other ways, yet have found themselves weak in this part, and have not been able to bear the weight of a secret joy, or of a secret sorrow, but have been obliged to disclose it, even for the mere giving vent to themselves, and to unbend the mind oppressed with the load and weights which attended it. Nor was this any token of folly or thoughtlessness at all, but a natural consequence of the thing, and such people, had they struggled longer with the oppression, would certainly have told it in their sleep, and disclosed the secret, let it have been of what fatal nature soever, without regard to the person to whom it might be exposed. This necessity of nature is a thing which works sometimes with such vehemence in the minds of those who are guilty of any atrocious villainy, such as secret murder in particular, that they have been obliged to discover it, though the consequence would necessarily be their own destruction. Now, though it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.